Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart, and today I'm joined by Nico Marché. He's the head of sales over at Spendesk, a little company out of Paris. And today we're going to be talking about some mistakes he's made growing his sales team from zero to 25 people in just about 3 years. Nico, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Colin. Yeah, thank you for having me on your podcast. You know, it's very funny because the first book I ever read when I started, doing sales 3 years ago was actually Predictable Revenue. So I had to read it again a few times to really understand the core concepts. But yeah, we're a big fan here at Spendesk.
Awesome. And just some context here. You said when you started learning sales 3 years ago?
Yeah.
So that was at the beginning of your time with Spendesk here?
Exactly. So yeah, I have a kind of more engineering background. Originally back in France, I did an engineering school and I went to NYC to work there for a time and then like to UC Berkeley, where I did launch a first company there that I failed totally. And this is when I came back to France that I decided, okay, now I need to learn not to build a product, but more to sell it. I think it's more naturally what I like to do. And this is how I joined the company in the very early days, where there were only like two people in the company, like 10 beta customers, no pricing, only an MVP. And this is how it started, the whole adventure started.
Right on. And so you jumped into sales. Were you their first sales rep? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, so at the time when I joined, there were two persons, Rodolphe, the CEO of the company, plus technical co-founder, was more in charge of developing the product. And I joined alongside a couple of other guys. And the three of us were in charge of, really developing all the business on the sales side, on the customer success side, etc. And so for the past 3 years, my main responsibility was to grow the business. And so at first, this was through sales, outbound sales. This is what we do at Spendesk mainly. And then I built the first team, the first couple of teams. We also launched internationally. And today, I'm overseeing like the revenue growth of the company. So my role evolved a lot. I'm more in charge today of, structuring the different business teams, hiring, coaching, defining the go-to-market strategy, the sales strategy, and also I'm responsible for key strategic projects, which are linked to growth, basically.
Perfect. And so all of your, what percentage of your total revenue would you say comes from outbound?
So at first, 3 years ago, it was 100% outbound. Because in fact, if you look at Spendesk as a product, the solution we're building is really like this new spend management platform, which is a kind of product for enterprise companies. But where we saw an opportunity to disrupt the market was more on the SMB mid-market part. And so on this market, there was no platform to manage all of your types of spending. So you can have solutions on the expense management part, you can have solutions on the invoice part, but there was no concrete end-to-end platform for finance teams to manage all of the spending in one place. And so when you look at it, it's not like a new CRM, a better one, but it's really like a new product category. And a new product category implies that you really have to go and get your value proposition out there. And this is why we decided to go all in on outbound. And so we went to 100% outbound in both in terms of number of deals and revenue to more like 70% today in France. And we're a bit heavy on outbound on the different markets we launched all over Europe.
Wow, fantastic. So overall, it seems like your reliance on outreach has decreased a little bit, but initially it was pretty much everything.
Yeah, so when you launch a business, you have to pick one channel, one distribution channel, and work on it and design it, refine it, optimize it. And this should be enough to get to where we are, meaning like at Series B stage today. And then as you grow, you need to figure out what are the next distribution channels that can help you go from 5 to 10 million ARR, 10 to 30, 30 to 100. And what got us here is really like outbound sales. And so we really because of the challenges we're facing, we faced a lot of problematics other companies may only face when they're bigger, more mature, etc. But we really had, you know, to figure out all around out down to who we sell to, what type of niche markets we want to go after, what type of customers, how we can identify these customers, what's the right messaging, who's the right persona to target, what's the right sales process, outbound sales process, etc. And when you look at a product like Spendesk, that's basically for anyone and everyone. So we can sell to companies with 30 employees, like such as Predictable Revenue, for example, but also like bigger companies with a few hundred employees or a few thousand employees. And so in these cases, it's really important to narrow down what your niche market, where you want to focus, and who you don't want to go after. And I think this is one of the first things we did, was really thinking through who are we going to sell, who we're going to help, and how to find these guys.
Right on. And so you've got, in the early days, 100% of your revenue coming from purely outbound. Can you talk to me about some of the loose numbers in terms of how many SDRs did you start with? How many SDRs to account execs did you have in the early days? And then how did that change to what it looks like now?
Yeah. I think it's funny because, you know, in Europe, the concept of SDRs is not as common as it is in the US. So actually at first, when we launched our first sales team, we had what we called full stack salespeople. So people who are doing like everything, the full sales cycle from A to Z. So from sourcing themselves, the prospects and reaching them, finding the email addresses, the phone numbers, etc., to doing the easy outreach, qualifying the leads, closing them, and even taking care of the first steps on the platform. So they were like really, you know, stretching both on the lead generation side and also on the onboarding side. And as we grew, we decided to specialize and shift this full stack sales model to a more classic SDRs, account executive model. And the guys who are doing the SDR activity here at Spendesk are called actually BDRs. So they are really like the tip of the spear, working with the growth marketing team we have, with the marketing team, with the AEs, to really like, you know, go after the right accounts we want to attack. So we went from this model with full stack salespeople and then decided to specialize the different roles on the sales side only at first. And now we are even a step further because we decided to create a more broad pods, revenue pods with an SDR, account executive, but also like an onboarding resources and customer success manager resources. And all of these guys, these four different stakeholders, if you bring them into the same organization, they're able to really work better towards the same goal.
And so each of those, like the BDR supports the AE, supports the customer success manager. And so it's it's essentially, if I hear you correctly, it's every single customer that AE closes goes directly to that customer success manager.
Yeah, we have different sales processes at Spendesk. At first, we had only one sales process where it was really like qualification, discovery, demo, and then closing, and then straight to the customer success manager. Mm-hmm. Now we still have this process that we call 30-30-30. So 30-minute disco, 30-minute demo, 30-minute potential negotiation, closing. We prepare them for the onboarding, and then we send them to the onboarding manager, and we have a kind of bit more complex sales process with 5 to 7 steps where we go deeper. We try to get what we call the audit trinity. So not only the CFO, who's our main buyer, but also potentially the accountant and the operational champion we may have, who can be like the head of sales, the head of marketing, etc. And so this process is a bit longer. The BDR is in charge of really starting the conversation, you know, deciding in which process we should send these guys through in order to close them. And then the account executive is going to do like the sales phase, where they're going to bring the different stakeholders on board, do a more in-depth discovery, work on the ROI, work on the business case. And then we're going also like to assign an onboarding manager and a customer success manager. So essentially, we went from having full stack salespeople to a team of more specialists, even though some may stretch on one of the job based on the sales process we are. Our main objective and really what we deep down believe is that the sales guy people today, they have to be really like enablers. So they're not here to block. So there is the process is made so that the SDR can decide to ask specific questions or can skip them in order to, you know, increase the speed at which we're going to close the customer. And really, like when we think of designing this sales process and we think of what the SDRs should do, what their attitude should be, it's really about teaching them how to engage with the prospect, how to qualify a bit, but not too much, and more like give them, you know, give to the customer reasons to go deeper in the process. This is really how we try to teach and build the sales process.
I like the way you have the sort of one-to-one-to-one mapping of the, you know, BDR to account exec to customer success. It sort of creates that closed loop of these, I think you said four people. You have a researcher in there as well?
So we have SDR, AE, the onboarding manager who's in charge of, you know, setting up the client for success. And then we have the customer success manager who is more in charge of, you know, churn, upsell, cross-sell, etc. But this, we did it because we realized there were misalignment between who the sales teams was going after and what actually makes a good customer. And so we realized that, yeah, we do have qualification criteria, but we don't have unqualification criteria. And when you create this team, which is really like a soccer team, you know, everyone has a role to play in the team, guys in charge of striking goals, another one is more like the goalkeeper. Everyone has a job to do in this ecosystem. But the objective, the overall output is really like the fact we win the match. And this is why, for example, in terms of compensation, we really put a lot of emphasis in the team bonus versus individual bonus, because our objective is really to find customers, make them successful, make them reach their outcomes through Spendesk. We're only like enablers so that they can reach their business goals.
So can you walk me through the metrics of just, because I want to jump into some of the mistakes you made, but there's a really interesting idea around the pods. So the SDR at the front, and then like how many meetings are they booking? How many deals is the AE closing? How many customers is the customer success manager handling?
Yes. So this is something we refine. I think when you're in a kind of scaling mode where you have a lot of growth, you need to be ready to change the model, the process, the comp plan, the objective, like every 3 to 6 months. So it's something we also carry on working as we grow to ensure it's really, it fits how our customers are expecting to engage with Spendesk, are expecting to succeed with Spendesk. Mm-hmm. So in the pod model we have today, we usually have two BDRs working with one AE, working with an onboarding manager and a customer success manager. And so you have like two SDRs, one AE working with an onboarding manager, and this onboarding manager is also working with another group of SDRs and AE. What we've done recently is merging some of the sales pods so that we have now four BDRs for two AEs. Mm-hmm. And this is great because as you grow, the first structure helps your AEs to teach and transmit knowledge to the SDRs. But as you grow, you don't want to find yourself in a place where perhaps your one AE is not closing enough. It's not because of the AE, it's because of the SDRs he has, could be like junior SDRs, and they are not as good engaging prospects, especially in a kind of new product category system where you need to pitch, you need to be really good on the expertise, etc. And by merging the different pods and having four BDRs and two AEs, you kind of de-risk the model, because you know if one AE is not successful, it's not because of the lack of leads, but it's because of the AE perhaps process or the way it's discussing with customers, etc., and the other way around. So in terms of quotas, the SDRs, the outbound SDRs, have to detect around 15-ish opportunities a month, and then based on if you're SMB or mid-market, we change the quota a bit. Mm-hmm. And the AEs have to bring a specific amount of new revenue per month. So we're still on a kind of monthly quota here and not on an annual quota. It's really like monthly recurring revenues they're going after.
Okay.
For the onboarder, it's more like a kind of project management job. So it's not about the number of accounts they need to onboard every month. They are more dependent on the kind of of the quota of the account executive, but it's really more about the success of onboarding and reaching the a booking value as fast as possible for the new customers. And for the customer success manager, then it's more about having a specific portfolio of a few hundred accounts to go after, to help grow in the product, potentially detect cross-sell or upsell opportunities, and then they can work back with the account executive, which is really an asset they can leverage. One thing we did is really like, you know, to create this kind of galaxy of assets the sales team and the customer success team can use. So they can work, they can bring our own CFO on specific calls, IGN specific calls. They can bring their CSM if they're an AE on the, at the very end of the sales process to really like, you know, not only a thing that we're selling a product, but we have a full service behind it. And if you invest in the deal, you create depth, which is super good because the prospect feels that you care basically. And this is how you can increase the speed of the sales process. This is how you can win against existing solutions, really by showing that you care, investing a lot of resources on your side on specific deals.
That's very cool. And so I think just to answer the last question I had in my head about the pods piece, and then we'll move on. It sounds like you have some, there's four BDRs, two AEs, customer or onboarding person, and a customer success manager.
Yeah.
And it sounds like those, the onboarding rep and the customer success rep, might be shared across a few different pods.
Exactly.
Because they're exactly. Okay, cool. I was just trying to, I was thinking 1-1-1-1, that'd be a pretty slow job for the onboarding manager. But if they're shared pods, then that makes it makes the math make more sense.
Yeah, we really try to you know, figure out what's the capacity model of each rep. Is, you know, how many opportunities a SDR can produce on a monthly basis, and then what's retro engineer and find out, okay, based on the conversion rates we have, what is the minimum amount of activities. And we also do it on the customer success side, is really understanding how many accounts an onboarding manager can manage on a monthly basis, and then saying, okay, so one onboarding rep can actually manage two pods instead of one. So this is how we try to think about designing these revenue pods.
That's perfect. And if you're, I mean, don't want to go too deep into this because I want to get a sense for you. You guys weren't always this perfect. You didn't always have it dialed in. I'm wondering if you can talk to me about some of the mistakes that you made in the early days.
Yeah. Some of the mistakes we've made, actually, we were aware that it was not necessarily the best thing to do. But again, when you learn, you have to fail personally in order like to not to do the mistake. Even if you read stuff on, okay, you should not hire this type of person, you should do this and not do that. In the end, you realize that, okay, I read this a year ago, so why are we doing this mistake?
We have the same problem, but my co-founder wrote the book. So, you know, fewer excuses over here.
Yes, I think I like to distinguish three phases of our journey so far. So the first one was really how to get from zero customer to 100 customers. And second one was more like, you know, when we were at about 100 customer, 200 customers, how we can get to 1,000. And more, we are more in this third step of the journey where it's more like going from 1,000 customers to 10,000 customers. So when you look at the first step, first stage, which is, you know, the product market fit stage, you have to find your first customers. And so one of the mistakes we've done was not to understand that we were going after only 100 customers. And so we were thinking, okay, we need to set up a super strong lead generation process. We need to set up automation tool, outreach tools, in order to scale the volume of emails we can send on a weekly basis. And we did set up a few of these things before realizing that actually we just need 100 customers. And for this, you can go ask introduction, you can go and do things that don't scale, actually, which is a super important thing everyone knows today, but you really have to understand what it means is you need to adapt the system and the process you're going to put in place to the goal you're going after. So in the early days, we really knew who we were going after. So we look at our first 40 customers and we identified, okay, they are using our solution this way. And we tried to look really at how they're using the product. So we sat down together in a room, and this is an exercise we're still doing these days, to trying to discuss and brainstorm around ourselves and what makes this customer a good customer. And this is how we realized that there are a specific number of employees required to use a solution like Spendesk. Perhaps we needed a specific setup in terms of finance team in place so that they can fully leverage the solution. We realized that the fact companies were growing fast was also a big enabler to our systems that enable you to have this kind of centralized system, core finance system, where you can centralize all type of spending while scaling. And this is how we identified a few quantitative criteria that we could leverage to source potential prospects. So this we've done. And then we decided to customize the messaging as well. You know, when you can sell to anyone and everyone, you have a tendency when you, your quota and when your growth objective increase to just say, okay, we're just going to do times 10 the number of messages in emails we're sending a week, and the lead generation, the number of leads with grow accordingly. So we tried to do it, and actually it didn't. So we doubled the number of contacts a week for the overall team, and the results was to propose. The response rate was going down. We did not have the expected amount of leads we wanted. And I think this is what we've done really wrong, is we did not understand who our ideal customer profiles were and what was the right messaging based on the use case, based on the persona, based on the company we're going after. So when we realized this, we decided, okay, let's take a step back. Let's see, let's assess why we are not succeeding while we were before. And this is why when we realized that we needed really kind of internal team dedicated to really think through who we're going after, what the messaging is, etc. And this is how we came with this creation of a growth marketing team, which is a kind of combination between technical profiles and marketer profiles who were in charge of really being responsible to get the right source, to get the right company, to enrich the data and give the right accounts to the sales team so that we can go after them. And I think, yeah, one of the mistakes people do is when we're in a kind of product market fit mode, which you just have to validate a few assumptions, a few hypotheses. And when, you know, the CEO decides that we should go after growth this quarter, you say, okay, we're just going to double or triple what we're actually doing and it will work. And in our case, it did not actually.
So what you're saying is it was more about finding the actual, the niches that you could go after. And really try and double down on finding as many of those as possible. And you actually had a whole team dedicated to that process. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think this team, one of the first job of this team was really to find out a simple but efficient lead scoring system. And so, you know, when we identified that the number of employees was important, the number of finance people in the company, the growth they had, potential job openings, are they looking for other people or to increase different offices? This was really the basis of the lead scoring model we put in place. So this team, their function is really like to find the right sources. So they use a bunch of tools and we also like hired like what we call growth engineers, so full stack developers who are actually dedicated to help the business teams. So they are really like supercharging the sales team actually, who developed a lot of scrappers internally to scrap all of these sources. So it can be rankings, it can be common sources such as LinkedIn, etc. And so they're going to run these scrappers to get the data and the company names out of these sources. Once they've done it, we're going to enrich the data. So we're going to go from a company name to a full prospect ready to be engaged. So company name, a few contacts in the company, the phone number, the email address, and any relevant data that the rep can use to customize his message. So it can be news, it can be the fact they are looking for a new accountant, it can be technologies they may be using. So for example, what we've done recently is identifying if they were using existing finance solutions. So for example, we can detect if in your case, you're using Expensify, yes or no, and adapt the messaging we're going to send you based on your specific situation. Their job is really to get the data and read the data so that the rep can do what we call customization at scale, is having the same relevance in their messaging as if they were contacting everyone manually or one-to-one. And so this team they are working both with tools we've created on our own, tools you can find on the market, so enrichment tools such as Clearbit, of course, but also tools to find your email, such as GetEmail, People, Lusha, these type of tools. And we also outsourced a lot of these repetitive tasks with virtual assistants. And this was a super important thing, is we identified that some of the tasks this growth marketing team was doing were not we were not able to automate them, or it was not worth doing it. And so we decided to set up a whole infrastructure, a whole process with virtual assistants in Mauritius Island, train them on the tool we have. We even took a plane to go there for a couple of weeks. This was a kind of mix between work and vacation to train them so that can be super efficient. And today, thanks to this, we can source 2K companies a week, get them enriched with 3 contacts, with all the email address, phone numbers, etc., so that the reps, when they come in the morning at the office, they have the list of accounts ready to be engaged. And this is really the job of this team, is to supercharge the sales organization.
Man, that's really cool. And so you've got this whole team that's dedicated of, and this is outside the company, and you've got them running through and sourcing all the contacts so that when your BDR show up in the mornings, they've got properly profiled companies at their disposal.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a good thing, but it can be also a disadvantage, because when you have this capacity of sourcing that many leads, sometimes you forget the basics. And so at one point, you know, we identified it was a blocker. So we decided to invest heavily in this sourcing and enrichment machine, and we did a good job. And then the reps were fed with a lot of leads, and it was super easy because they were not doing the work of sourcing and reaching, etc. So they forgot a bit the richness it is to have leads ready. And so we went in a mode that where we were burning leads too fast. So we had a lot of lemons, but we are not squeezing the lemons enough. And this is where we decided, okay, guys, not because we have the capacity to source that many leads that you need to forget the basics, which is having a list of 300 to 400 accounts a quarter with any contact you need in this organization, all the data you need, and you need to really go and squeeze them one by one, and then we can replace them if they are burned. But you know, when you develop something, it's often, you know, when you have weak spots, blind spots, this is where you're good at this moment in time on this part of the sales process, and you're going to focus your energy on another part, and 6 months down the line, the situation can be inversed. So it's an advantage, and sometimes it can be a disadvantage.
That's fair. Okay, so the first one was, the first big sort of mistake you made was sort of trying to scale before you really understood your ICP or you had your market sort of dialed in. What was the next big one?
So I think when you look at when you're launching a new product category, I think it's really based related to this specific point. When you're launching a new product category, you really need to evangelize the market, and you really need to work out your expert positioning on the market. And we realize if we want to engage you, we really need to strengthen our content strategy to be labelized, to be considered as experts on the market. And this is when we realize that when you look at demand generation and pipeline creation in general, you really have 3 pillars. So you have the lead generation, you have the lead qualification, is when you have someone interested on the phone, how well you can qualify them, what kind of discovery questions you should ask, how to engage them. And you have the content strategy. So we did solve the problem we have on the lead generation side. We then focused a lot on lead qualification, is okay, what should be the right questions? What are the elements of qualification we need to ensure this is potentially a good fit for us? So let's go and get them or not. And the content strategy went at last. And this is when we decided to rethink the way we approach content. Before, we used to do a lot of volume in terms of content, you know, more SEO content with the objective to getting traffic, etc. But as we discussed with our customers, and as we were more expert in this specific market, we knew that the real value was to bring expertise in this community. CFOs, you need to think of your persona. Your persona, they are looking to get value from you. If you want to convert them, they're going to use your solution because you're helping them solve a problem, but also because they trust you, that they can use you as consultants. It's really like the consultative selling approach, and really use your expertise for their own problems. A problem we had back in the day is that we did not have enough data, enough reports, enough ebooks that the reps could use to affirm their expert positioning on the market. This is why we invested heavily. We went back to the customers we had. We did like a lot of interviews with the CFOs we had to gather real insight, asking questions such as, okay, what are you reading at the moment? What are the different sources of information you're looking at? What do you like to learn? Do you meet with your peers, yes or no? And this is when we decided to do a couple of things. The first one was really to leverage the power of the community. Something you should do in the very early days, something we did not do. Often we say, build the community before the product. And it's so true. You need to have this kind of niche market where people know that Spendesk is an expert. Spendesk is for this type of modern finance leaders. And this is, and as soon as they have a question, in their head, the brand is here. Spendesk is a brand, is the expert on the market. And so this is why we launched what we call CFO Connect Community, which is a global community of finance leaders, modern finance leaders. Today, it's all over Europe. We are launching events in Paris, in London, in Berlin, some in Spain, etc. And where we want to gather similar-minded people that can exchange on topics. And we're just here as an external actor, stakeholder, just bringing them together. And this community, we decided to create it after realizing we did not invest enough in our expert positioning. And I think today you're not only picking a solution, there are a lot of SaaS solutions on the market. So either for a CRM or for a finance system, you're also buying the brand behind it. Mm-hmm. You know, when we implemented Salesforce, I didn't even think of the CRM itself. I knew I wanted a consistent, a solid solution that can scale. And I knew I wanted Salesforce straight away. And this is a position you want to be in. You want to be categorized as the persons to go to in this type of situation. So it's the first thing we can do, which we do. And the second thing we did was roll back a bit on our content strategy and focus more on quality versus quantity, bringing a lot of intelligence on the market. Because of our solution, we can have a lot of data on the habits of spend at work. And this data is super relevant. When you're on a call and you tell a specific customer about a similar customer to them, what they're doing with the solution, what type of spend management they should look at this point in their life, etc., they're super interested. So second stuff we've done was really invest much more in qualitative reports, leveraging other players in the field that could also help us in terms of brand awareness to produce this kind of interesting pieces of content your reps can reuse in their outbound strategy.
That's interesting. And it sounds like you're going much deeper than just a case study there. It's a full profile of a customer so that when your reps are talking to a company that looks like a manufacturer with 300 employees, right, they can quickly pull up that reference and say, okay, well, we've got one that's similar and they're Acme, they make anvils, they have, you know, this and this and that. Here's what their spending habits look like. Does that sort of line up with you? And the customer's going, oh shit, yeah, that sounds exactly like what we do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this common knowledge that you have in the early days where everyone knows basically mostly all of the customers. So it's super easy, you know, when I go in a meeting, I have this example in mind of a client we closed 3 weeks ago that I can reuse. But, you know, in the strategy, when you're doing consultative selling, it's important to have a positioning where you're an enabler and you're bringing expertise and you're always selling by telling stories. And as you scale, it's super tough to ensure that every rep in your organization, like from the BDR to the account executive to the customer success manager, when they prepare a meeting, they have access to customer success stories they can reuse by quoting the names even of the clients we have. So if I go and see a company similar to you. I want the rep to be able to say, okay, it's funny because the situation you're telling me reminds me of the one Colin was facing back in the days where he was struggling to centralize all of the spending of his different teammates because the team is remote. And this is exactly why they decided to implement Spendesk. And, you know, scaling this customer knowledge in one of the big problems you face when you scale your team from 5 reps to 30 or even more reps, so that everyone comes with the right cards in their hands, with the right weapons at a client meeting.
That's super powerful. And I love that you're taking it such a so much deeper, because you're totally right. In the early days when there's just sort of 10 of you, you're like, hey, you remember Jerry? And they're like, everybody's like, yeah, well, I know Jerry.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, we did that thing for him and you can't remember the name. They're like, oh yeah, everybody's on the same page. But once you get above sort of 10, 20, 30 people, not everybody knows every single customer, and you start to get a little bit more siloed, and the information you need to be a whole lot more intentional about sharing it.
Yeah, I think it's important to teach reps not only on how to sell, so the process, the lead generation, the messaging, etc., but also on the what to sell. And the what to sell, people often forget that it's not only about the product, it's not only about the value proposition, the messaging, it's mainly about the customer expertise. This is what we're bringing on the table. And I really believe that today, only the consultative selling approach works, at least in our case. It's not like hard sales anymore. It's really like, I need to trust you. I need to know that you know my job. Mm-hmm. And this is why I'm going to buy your solution. People are not only buying the product, they are really buying the person behind the phone or at the client meeting. So they need to trust your opinion on their problems. And when I go at a meeting with my team, what I keep telling them is that your job is to present the options your client has. So you have option A, which is staying in your status quo today, and you have problems. This is why you accepted this meeting. You have option B, which is to go with this specific solution. And you have option C, which is to pick a tool like Spendesk, and here are the pros and cons. And the job of the rep is really like to find out this positioning where it's still a selling job where you need to engage a prospect and make them buy emotionally, but it's also a job where you need to list out the different options on the table, specifically with analytical profiles like CFOs. You can't trick them. So they are really like, you know, assessing stuff coldly on, okay, what are the pros and cons? What's the ROI? What do I get from this solution? What's the price? And I trust you. You can be a good partner. I'm gonna go with you.
Right on. And especially in the early days when you don't have all this built out, it can be so much harder to, on the one hand, all your salespeople know all of the, you know, or if you have just one or two reps, chances are they know most of your customers because it was those two reps that closed most of them. But in the early days, before you have everything figured out, the role of an account exec is so much different. Right there, if you don't know, here's our perfect ICP. If you don't know, these are the best channels. If you don't know, this is exactly who we need to close and why. It can be really challenging as an account exec. How did you handle that piece with the compensation and the metrics and the goals before you really had it figured out?
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think the first solution is to hire correctly. It's not like to hire sales reps who are used to work in an ecosystem of pre-sales engineers, a super big brand, etc. is really to hire these kind of builders who can go with what they have, who can do the extra mile and stretch and create the presentation themselves. People who can sell the story, the vision, because you don't have the references back in the days. So you have to do with your convictions, your beliefs, and this is how you sell. In terms of compensation, so it's perhaps a bit different in Europe than in the US, but I really believe that if you want to motivate people, you need to do smart goals. So goals that are achievable, realistic, ambitious, but you want 80% of your team to achieve 100% of their target. This is at least our philosophy at Spendesk. And you can reward the extra mile and the extra performance by doing an accelerator, like for example at Spendesk. When you reach 100% of your quota, as soon as you do more, you're going to have an accelerator of 1.2. But back in the days, when it's not only dependent on their performance and on their skill set, what we decided to do was really relying heavily on the team bonus. So doing a kind of split between team bonus and individual bonus. At first, it was even 100% team bonus so that people focus on the right things. And you want your initial sales team to focus on validating assumptions, being okay with losing a client because we needed to check if it was a good fit or not. We needed to onboard them because we wanted to know if our product was good enough or not, if this feature was a deal breaker or if it was okay. And they were reluctant to use Pandesk, but still they are with us today and we can develop this feature. And it, you really need to align your compensations with the behavior you want your sales team to adapt. Mm-hmm. And for us, it meant 100% team bonus. Because it's linked to the product, which is an early stage product, because we don't have a lot of references, because you don't have yet this growth marketing team to source for you, etc. And as we've matured, and as the rep has had more leverage and control over his achievement, we decided to reduce the team part of their compensation to 100%, from 100% to 50%. And as we're scaling, we're going to reduce this part. But I think I strongly believe in this kind of image of the soccer team where everyone needs to work, not for themselves, not to keep the job and to be well seen by the coach, but more like to win the match. And this is a philosophy we want to have, is really like having people focusing, yeah, on their performance. And if they do well, they're going to be paid well, but also on the output of the team and the company.
And so what did that look like in the early days? It was 100% team bonus. What metric did you decide to set?
So it's only output driven. So it means that you're going to be incentivized on the new MRR you're closing every month. I'm going to leave the computation aside, but the new MRR is a combination of the revenue brought by the last three cohorts of customers you close, so that you're also incentivized in the fact your customer is successful 3 months down the road when they're using the Spendesk. So we had a kind of team quota of a specific amount of new revenue we had to bring in every month, and which was dependent, yeah, on the booking value, but also on the deployment. And this is something super important, is you don't want only to close as fast as possible, but you want your customer, in our case, to ramp up as fast as possible, because our sales strategy is very much to land on specific use cases and then to expand. We're not selling the full platform at once, like you could do with a CRM, where you're going to onboard all of your sales team at once. At Spendesk, you're going to first start on a pilot with a few team members, and then you're going to roll out the product. So it was really based on the new MRR per month for the overall sales team. And the customer success side, it was more a kind of quarterly bonus based on the company objective, okay? Because we want this team to be really focused on the customer success, that they're very successful with the product, they can reach the outcomes. But I think that the compensation model, it has to be a teamwork. You have to come with your opinion, to discuss with the different team leaders of what compensation models we could adapt. And there are a lot of compensation based on if it's inbound, outbound, based on the deal size you have, it can be either a percentage of the deal, or it can be a specific amount based on the quota you're achieving. There are a lot of models. I think it's the only rule is to adapt something that works today and at least for a year. This is how we think about the compensation model, is to say, okay, Tim, this is the compensation model we think that fits and aligns with the state of the business today and what we need today. We're going to make it evolve. And it's okay. We will just change it as we grow, so that it's always aligned and it always fits what we need as a business.
Perfect. And so it's sort of every year you updated and evolved and revised. Yeah. Gotcha. And so in the early days, I misunderstood. Was it the whole team, like not just the revenue team or sales team, but the entire company was on the same comp structure or in terms of like their bonus, or was it just specific to the sales team?
Only customer-facing teams, basically. So the sales teams was incentivized on new revenue overall, and the customer success team was incentivized more on the company growth objective quarterly.
Gotcha. And then as it grew and grew, as you got larger and larger, the reliance on the team, on the group incentive, or team incentive got smaller and smaller. And now, is it still a factor today?
Yeah, it is. I think it's just that the concept of team evolved. And today it's no longer like the overall sales team, for example, on the sales side with a new revenue for Spendesk as a company, but more on your local market. And this is where the concept of having this decentralized organization with people focusing on a specific market is interesting, because people are really owner of the market they are working on. They really consider it like the markets they need to conquer as a small team of persons. I think it can be super deceptive not to control your bonus. I feeling that no matter what you do, if you do the extra mile, if you work super hard, you won't be able to succeed. And this is why I think it's still important to keep this team component, but just change the definition of the team and make it smaller so that it's more relevant. You feel you have more control because you can help your friend who is at the other side of the table. You can help the customer success rep work on a specific upsell. It's really like this collaboration that you want to foster. And it's really linked to your values. I mean, I don't say there are other models that this is the only model that work. I just say that it needs to be aligned with your values and what you believe for your business organization, basically.
One of the things I really liked about our pre-interview is just the way that you approach and look at building these teams. Everything is very systematized. You know, it's engineered to a certain, you know, in a certain way. Can you talk to me about, like, and there's all these different things that you've done. Can you talk to me about the impact that they've had on your organization? You know, whether it's making sure that you've got a team that's researching deals ahead of time, whether it's making sure you've got the ICPs mapped, the compensation, et cetera. Like, what does that look like? And I know we sort of hit on the sort of growth marketing team a little bit, sort of in different respects, but what's been the impact it's had on Spendesk?
Yes, I think a lot of the improvements I told you were made sometimes too late after like 3 months of problematics we were facing, etc. For example, you know, the implementation of unqualification criteria was because there was a misalignment between new customers and successful customers. And just by leveraging the energy of the crowd and what people think, because actually you're hiring people to tell you what to do and not the other way around. And so this is why it's so important to hire the right people since the beginning, to ensure you have the right people on board. And you just have to set up an infrastructure that always push them to adapt the best behavior for the company. Wow. But when we think of what we should improve and what kind of function we could set up, we really look at what's the daily job of the rep. And so I spend a lot of my time with the different teams, going on client meetings with them, asking them about what they're doing, where they're wasting time, etc. And this is how you have these kind of weak signals that you know, okay, it's weird because this rep is spending this amount of time in his week researching for specific prospects, and it's perhaps we should outsource this from his job and create a specific function dedicated to this. And I think having this behavior, always looking how to maximize the time your reps spend with clients, if you think of this, you will always find out opportunities to make them spend more time with clients, and which is the objective. This is why you hire people. Otherwise, you don't need reps, you just do an online business. So the growth marketing team, it was based on this observation. What we've done recently is also focusing a lot more on the assets that are at disposal of the reps to do their job. So the customer success stories, we've made a library so that they can use them and be always on the ball when they go on a client meeting. We decided to do sessions, a monthly session, where we take a few reps, sales team and customer success team, and we look at the last clients we've closed, and we try to identify, okay, is there a new niche market? Is there a specific need? Why did they close? Why are they successful with the product today? And you're keeping this feedback loop between the team, the sales team, the customer success team, and the leadership team, so that you're always in contact with the battlefield, and you can always adapt and put the rifle in the right direction. It's so important. When we were only focusing on building the machine, we were forgetting about the customer. And I think being customer first and really thinking of how can I enable the prospects to use our solution, it's really about putting in place these feedback loops that can be super simple feedback loop. It can be a monthly meeting where people share lost deals and why we lost them, what we could have improved. It can be a monthly newsletter when we take all of the mistakes we've done on a specific situation. It can be trainings. So we do have bi-weekly trainings. Before, we had no training at all. So now we have bi-weekly training where we're going to deep dive on a specific product feature, on a specific product, and we're going to do it several times in the quarter because you need repetition. So before, we were doing only once and it was okay, so we told it once, it should work now. And we realized actually some of the reps did not attend, you need to mature the messaging, etc. And now we're doing like different trainings on the same topic. So the first training, you present the messaging, why we build the features, the product. You work with your product marketing team to have a consistent deck. And a month after, you go and make another training and you ask your reps, okay, what do you remember about this product? Can you pitch it to me? Can you tell me the story? So that you always ensure they're aware of the overall story and they sell the story and not only like the feature itself. So this is all of this type of small improvements. I think it's a lot of small steps. But if you want to identify each time which ones are the most impactful, you just have to ask to the team so that they can feed you with direct feedback, interesting feedback.
That's great, man. And so when we look at the overall results of the team, sort of before and after doing a lot of this, did you find any efficiency gains? Were you able to do more with less people? You know, what did that look like?
Yeah, so when you specialize your team, it's with the objective of having more efficiency on a specific job function. And so before, for example, an AE was able to close only like 8 to 10 deals a month because of the fact the AE was also doing the research on the different prospects. They were also prospecting, etc. And now on what we call the real-time sales model, so the model where we do 30-30-30 minute discovery, 30-minute demo, 30-minute closing, we can reach 20 to 25 deals a month now because the account executive has an infrastructure around him to help him close more deals, basically. On the BDR side...
Sorry, how big are those deals, just for context?
So yeah, so at Spendesk, the deal size ranges from 3K a year to 25, 30K a year approx. On the real-time sales model, it's more around like between 6K a year to 9K a year, 9 to 10K a year. This is the type of deals they are going after.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. And then on the BDR side, you're mentioning?
And on the BDR side, when you make them save time on research and on enrichment because you have this infrastructure in place, now they're able like to go and detect like 15 to 18 opportunities a month, purely outbound, which is tough when you know how tough outbound can be because they have all of this infrastructure around them and because they have the right data at the right place with the right tool, etc. So this and before, when you look at what good SDR was doing, it was doing perhaps 5 to 8 sales opportunities a month because they were wasting so much time on stuff which were not part of their actual scorecard.
Wow, and especially at I think you know if we're talking about $6,000 to $9,000 a year, a BDR is sourcing if they're sourcing 5 deals a month. You're probably not getting a return on the investment there.
So the bet you have to do is you have to go and tell the CEO that actually the model will work, not today, but we're confident in 6 months or 12 months it's going to work, and just invest accordingly. Because the blocker, the limiting point when you're scaling a sales team is really the pace at which you can find the best talents and ramp them up. And so you can't afford to wait until the engine is fine-tuned. Because if it's fine-tuned and you say, okay, now it's a good time, we can scale the team, it's too late. You're already late. Not having the people on board, even though you have a good product, a good system in place, is the worst because there is nothing you can do to scale the machine. So I think you have to find a fair trade between looking after efficiency and after a working ROI, but also like working your capacity model and your sales hiring plan a bit in advance so that when it's fine-tuned, you have the numbers, you have the headcount in place that can work in this system.
Beautiful. Nico, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I feel like I've learned so much. I do have a couple more questions for you, and then we're going to give you a chance to promote whatever it is. But at this stage, I want to just move to our lightning round of questions here. I got a couple questions for you. We'll get some quick answers and maybe we'll go a little bit deeper. Maybe we won't.
Cool, sure.
So tell me, how do you get people to reply to your emails?
So the first rule I give to rep is the person who's going to open your email needs to know why me, why now. So that's the first one. So it needs to be customized. It's often in the first sentence. So the why me, why now is why are you contacting me? Why is it relevant now for my company? And then when you do your homework, people are going to realize it. They're going to know you're not just outreaching thousands of people with the same message. And really, like, being customized is so important today if you want to stand out from the crowd. This is how we manage to get a good response rate, is customizing the hook, customizing the call to action, customizing the references you're going to put in your email so that you want to reply to me because you know I've done my homework in researching the information on your company.
Beautiful. And I love that you make it so much easier for your reps because a lot of that research is done.
They're exactly just
plugging things into the right spots.
Exactly. So
how do you coach a rep? Or how do you deal with the brush off on a cold call?
So I don't think we do concrete cold calls at Spendesk. We do what we call warm calls. So it's always after a first touch point, either LinkedIn Connect invitation, a small email with a lot of contacts. It's really like content-driven outbound. So when we call, we're going to refer to the piece of content or to the invitation to the CFO community we just made so that you have we have reasons to get you on the phone. And if we don't manage to connect to get an interest on you on the phone, it's not a big deal because the brand is out there. The name is in the head and we're going to nurture you with content so that at one point in time, you're going to come back to us. It can be in 3 months, can be in a year, but at one point, if you have this problematic you need to solve, you will come back to us.
Beautiful. And last question, what do you do when you need to push at the end of a quarter?
So I try not to be in this situation, but as always, this happens. A few things you can do, and we do actually, is really getting the exec team on board. And so having the exec team doing the phone calls with the reps to accelerate the different deals, finding what we call creative ways of doing pricing and offerings, perhaps proposing extra service, extra layer of service, perhaps proposing free seats, perhaps proposing another module. This is always how we can bring more value on the table with a specific deadline. But you know, putting a deadline in place because you're at the end of the quarter is a behavior we want to avoid if it's not in the best interest of the customer.
That's fair. We do the same thing. We actually organize our team on, the whole company is organized on cycles, which is actually 2 month as opposed to a quarter. And we don't have, like, we have cycle-based goals, but it's not the hustle and push as it would be at a, in a quarter-driven organization, because I just don't think that, just like you, I don't think it adds any value to the for the customer.
Yeah.
Right on, man. Well, thank you so much. I want to give you a chance to grill you and promote Spendesk in the most sales podcast way possible. Are you ready for the cold call?
Yes, go ahead.
All right.
So, Colin, can I ask you, do you have any finance leader in your organization?
We do.
Okay. So let's pretend you're the finance leader, if it's okay with you.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
And same size company as we are right now, bigger company, smaller company.
So how many people are you in your company?
36.
36. And it's a remote culture, right? Not everyone is working in the office.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Based in Vancouver, correct?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we can start.
All right. My phone is ringing. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Colin. It's Nicholas from Spendesk on the phone. How are you doing, mate?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. I'm calling actually regarding an email I sent you a couple of days ago. Did you have a chance to read it?
I did not.
Okay. So in this email, I was sending you a report where we surveyed more than 1,000 CFOs and finance leaders just like you to ask them about the biggest pain points they were facing. So I think you should definitely have a look at it. At Spendesk, what we do is that we help modern finance leaders such as you better organize their team spending. So you have a remote culture, right, Colin?
That's right.
Cool. How do you manage your team spending? Because I would assume that having a part of your team based in Vancouver, right, and part of the team remote, it can be tough getting the receipts and knowing exactly who spent what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we use Expensify.
Ah, okay, cool. So Expensify is for expenses only.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for subscription based payments or online purchasing, right?
True. Yeah.
Okay.
They just use credit cards for that.
Yeah, so in the report I sent you, you should have a look. There are a lot of case studies of companies who are using a bench, a finance stack with Expensify, Spendesk alongside, and they find a great tool in the fact that Spendesk is complementary to Expensify in this case. So, Colin, are you based in Vancouver yourself?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going in a guest town. I think it's near a neighborhood next week. So I think we're going to see a client of us there. Perhaps we could come by and just tell you more about the CFO Connect community we are building and Spendesk. How does it sound?
It sounds like a long trip all the way from Paris just to guest town just to see a customer, but I'm in.
Thanks, Colin.
Right on, man. I like the open with, hey, I sent you a report. That's is that a pretty common opener for you for your team?
Yeah, I think it's super tough to call out of the blue. Mm-hmm. I think you should always think, what kind of value I can bring to the prospect? Mm-hmm. And you know, having this loop where you send them a report, send them an invitation to an event of the CFO Connect community, which is a super good weapon. And I just advise as soon as when I see finance sales leaders, I just ask them, did you bring create a community? Because this is so powerful to position yourself as experts. I think, yeah, just referring to the email or the content you sent, it makes a good hook to start the conversation. It shows them that you genuinely care about what interests them in their life and in their professional life.
And I was genuinely trying to throw up some objections, but you just transitioned from telling me about the report to asking me a question so smoothly. It worked really great.
Yeah, cold calls, I think it's mainly about getting your interest and then, you know, more getting your trust, you to trust me so that I can just follow up and nurture you with more content. And at one point I get a client meeting and I will be able to tell you about Spendesk and see if it's a good fit for you.
Beautiful. Nico, I really appreciate all the time you've given us today. If somebody's super interested, if they're either in Paris and they're looking for a job, or if they say, hey, that Spendesk thing sounds awesome, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I do love WhatsApp message for call messages. This is some of my teammates today. This is how they apply. So you can just drop me a WhatsApp message. And if you're a good salespeople, you can find my phone number directly through LinkedIn with an extension, people, etc. You can just send me a WhatsApp phone message or just apply on our website. We're scaling all across Europe and we have big news for the new continent coming soon. We're looking for salespeople, business people, a lot of different functions. We really want passionate people who believe in the same work ethics as we do. We want to be in this never-ending journey where you have just immense opportunities to learn and to grow. And this is really what we like, is learn new things, fail, and just iterate and find new challenges we can tackle together.
Beautiful. Nico, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was amazing.
Thank you so much, Colin.
All right. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.
Thanks. Bye-bye.